The committee will come to order. There is a quorum present. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes from February 25th and 27th, 2015?
So moved.
Representative Gunther moves. Approval of the minutes from February 25th and 27th. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes to be made? Hearing none, all those in favor of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. The first bill up today is House File 515 from Representative Lewick. Representative Lewick, I will move your bill and recommend that it be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. We have the bill before us, and Representative Lewick, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. House File 515 would do a much-needed alignment to nursing home beds in our area of the state. I'll tell you right up front, I'm no expert in this area. It's a very complex process that we have to go through as we deal with these. So what I'd like to do is I've got Mr. Mike Dewitt here who can lay out exactly what it is we're trying to do here to ensure that we properly meet the needs of our elderly in north central Minnesota.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Michael Dewitt.
All right.
The purpose of this bill is really a bed management issue. Back in 1997, I represent the Evangelical Lutheran Good Samaritan Society. In 1997, we had a skilled nursing facility destroyed by flood, and we had legislation put in place at that time that allowed us to rebuild that building. It was 129 beds, and as we rebuilt it, we would use the interim rate adjustment and settle up provision rule, and we've never done anything with that. And right now Polk County is a county that is overbedded. What we're proposing with this is to leave at least 25 beds in Polk County, but then be able to redistribute the rest of those beds in up to three other locations throughout the state. And we would again just ask that it would be the same provisions that would apply. At this point, we have had conversation with Department of Human Services, Department of Health, and they are aware of what we're doing with this and have been supportive of the language that we've put forward, and it is being viewed as budget neutral.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 515? Seeing no one, are there questions from the members? Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I wonder if Mr. Held is here and could come forward and maybe explain. I didn't see him, but
it doesn't look like he's here.
Well, I wonder if there's anybody who could give us a little more background information about what the issue is here. I don't know, you know, as we sit here and just from what the testifier said, I just don't feel like I know enough about this as a policy matter to say yes or no. I don't know why they need permission in the first place.
Okay, is there anyone in the audience from DHS that could respond to Representative Liebling's question? I'm not seeing one. Maybe they're coming in a little bit later. We do have another question from Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Polk County is my county, and I actually had talked to the leadership there. They had told me that they wanted to adjust beds, but they want to retain the ability to add on to the, like he said, the flood-damaged area. Now they have more assisted living, but also board and care, I believe, in that facility. It's a good-sized facility, but I know that my understanding was, and I'm not the expert on it, Representative Liebling, but my understanding was that they cannot shift beds without permission from us.
That is correct.
Okay.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair, and I see you're kind of scanning the audience, too. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to bring these kind of bills to policy committee when we don't have anybody can kind of explain the policy to us. You know, I don't know what to say. I mean, I know these kinds of bills come before the legislature a lot, and I know that the system that we use is pretty complicated, and you know, there are a lot of rules involved, and I know that's one of the reasons that you have your big bill is to kind of readjust some of this stuff. And I don't know how these bills are going to fit into what you're trying to do, and I just think it would be, you know, I don't feel comfortable voting on a bill like this without understanding the background a little bit more. I don't know if maybe Ms. Pugnelli can give us some, or Mr. Williams could maybe give us a little primer on what the issue is here.
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling. So current law imposes a moratorium on the construction of new beds for nursing homes. My understanding is that the facility in Polk County received an exception to that moratorium to build an additional 129 beds for this flood, and that moratorium required those new beds be constructed in Polk County. And so this bill would require that 25 of the new beds continue to be constructed in Polk County, but an additional 104 beds could be built in other counties in the state and distributed in up to three other counties.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Williams. So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if they got an exception to the bed moratorium, and we heard from Mr. Held before kind of the reasons for that Minnesota had been overbedded, that being overbedded increases costs, that more of our long-term care is shifting to not to nursing homes, but to other, you know, home care and so on, and how expensive nursing home care is. In the, you know, relative to home care and so on. And so, I'm not sure, you know, every member brings bills for their local community because their nursing homes ask them to, and so if we don't apply any standards to that, I just don't know. This was an exception, as I'm understanding, to the moratorium, that they were allowed to build additional beds, and now they say they don't need them, they want to move them elsewhere. I'm not so sure that's a great policy idea, and I'm not really, you know, hearing anything. Maybe the testifier would like to expound on it a little bit more. You know, why should we allow extra beds to be moved to other places that when these were beds were built as an exception to the moratorium? So I guess at this moment I'm not really hearing a good rationale for why we would vote for this bill.
All right. Thank you, Representative Liebling. And I believe we have Kim Brenna from DHS that's here, and maybe she can add to the point.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kim Brady, and I am with the Nursing Facility Race and Policy Division of the Department of Human Services. And I just walked in, so I didn't catch all of the discussion and all of the questions. But I believe that this is the facility that they received the moratorium exception because of the flood. And so they had these beds, and the cost for these beds had been recognized previously. And that is why it is believed to be cost neutral. And so I believe that the author is proposing to move some of these beds to another community where they feel that there is a greater need.
Okay. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to know what the other counties are.
All right. At this point, we haven't really identified those counties exactly. We want to really look and determine, you know, what happens legislatively and where we have facilities in. We have like 34 locations, and we would just put them in locations where they are underbedded as it relates to the beds per thousand median adjusted age.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe you have a facility in Mankato, and which has an excellent reputation. But I also believe that Mankato right now is probably one of those places where it's overbedded. that we have a problem. And so I guess I would be a little concerned, even though, like I said, you guys have probably the best reputation in town, that if you were going to put more beds in Mankato, that it would make we'd have a problem.
We don't have a facility in Mankato, and that wouldn't be a location that we'd be looking at. We would do it in an area where it's an area that is already underbedded and underserved.
Okay, any further questions from members? All right, seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 515 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Next, we have House File 1221, Representative Zerwas. Representative Zerwas, I will move House File 1221 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. I understand you have an amendment to the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have an A1 author's amendment, if you can move that as well.
All right. Representative Zerwas, I will move your amendment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The A1 amendment gets the bill in the shape in which I'd like to present it to the committee. It adjusts the threshold for the next level beds from 150 to 160 and the rate from $12 to $12.50.
All right. Are there any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Zerwas, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 1221 increases the amount of certain nursing homes that have projects approved through the moratorium exception process can receive as a construction project rate adjustment for their approved project. The bill impacts two nursing homes, Guardian Angels Care Center, which is in Elk River, and Mount Olivet Careview Home, which is in Minneapolis. Both homes have proposed renovations to their facilities to better serve their residents. The homes are not asking for approval of their projects, but a change in the property rate greater than the amount allowed through the moratorium exception process under current law. At this time, I would ask Mr. Hawkinson to explain why the legislation is necessary and a little bit about his Mount Olivet project.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tim Hawkinson, and I'm the administrator for Mount Olivet Careview Home, where I've been for 29 years. I want to thank you, Representative Zerwas, for bringing this needed legislation forward. As the representative mentioned, both homes have proposed renovations to our facilities to better serve our residents. We are not asking for the approval of our projects. That is being done by the Moratorium Exceptions Committee, but instead asking for a change in the property rate limit allowed through the moratorium exception process under current law. Property rate limits, which limit the amount of debt recognized in the nursing home reimbursement formula, have not been adjusted for decades. So some second-generation moratorium projects, such as ours, do not have enough room in the property rates to receive sufficient reimbursement to make the projects financially feasible. My facility would not be able to do this project without some type of an adjustment. One of the most important things I may say this morning is that the rate increase caused by the modification included in this legislation would not require an additional appropriation. There is no fiscal note to this. It would be funded through the existing moratorium exception appropriation that is allowed on a competitive basis. This legislation would not give either Mount Olivet or Guardian Angels any preference in that process, but would allow our projects to be financially feasible if approved under the existing process. This year, $1.1 million was approved for the moratorium exception process, yet less than $500,000 would be used even if all seven projects who applied are approved. I would just like to briefly provide an overview of our project. First of all, we would alleviate a significant fire code issue deficiency by replacing the plenum system with a vent system. This is a major part of the project. All ceilings have to be torn down and direct vents need to be built. We would move our therapy center from a cramped area in the basement to the main floor so the residents and families have better access to it. We would renovate all double rooms to be smart double rooms where the beds each have a window and are angled from each other with a semi-private partition in between them. We would also increase our single rooms from only 9 to 61. And we would increase the number of our transitional care beds and our memory care program. Thank you for your consideration, and I ask your for your support of House File 1221.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Dan Dixon. I'm the CFO for Guardian Angels of Elk River. I would also like to thank Representative Zerwas for bringing this legislation forward. First, I would like to reiterate that we are not asking for approval for our project through this legislation, but a change in property rates greater than the amount allowed through the moratorium exception process under current law that would assist us in moving forward with our renovations. This would not require additional appropriations as it would be funded through the existing moratorium exception appropriation that is allowed on a comprehensive basis. Mr. Hokanson described the impact of the CareView facility for the bill. Similarly, we project that the current rate setting system will fall short in reimbursement under the life of the debt by about $3.8 million for our project. With an additional $4 per resident day, that deficit is estimated to be only $25,000 negative. I'd like to briefly provide an overview of Guardian Angels renovation. The original project was built in 1965, 50 years ago. For our residents and families who visit, we need to enlarge the common areas with a clear-story, brilliant sunroom. The most significant impact would be around the restrooms or the bathrooms in the resident rooms, replacing small shared restrooms with private restrooms on the exterior wall for each room for a greater improvement of privacy and making them all handicap accessible, which they are not today. Redesigning staff work areas and dining room common spaces will provide for a much more friendly, efficient, and safe environment for residents, staff, and family visitors. Making other improvements such as newly redesigned nutrition center, HVAC upgrades throughout, including a replacement of two 50-year-old steam boilers, will make it much more efficient for the operation of the project. More efficient fresh air supplies, a new roof, more efficient windows, flooring, and safe and a safer, more user-friendly entranceway. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. I would urge your support for HF 1221. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, are there questions from members about this bill? Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you. You know, it certainly sounds like you do need to do a renovation, but I wonder if you don't get this bill passed, are you still going to do your renovation?
Mr. Hawkinson.
I can speak for ours. We could not do it. We're several hundred thousand dollars short a year under our property rate limit, so we couldn't even consider the project. So.
Representative Liebling?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, at what point are you in planning? Have you, you've costed it out and you've gone a fair ways into this. Are you, what happens if you don't then go forward, I guess?
Mr. Hokanson.
Well, we would just we couldn't make the improvements we needed. We're trying to get our facility ready for the next 50 years by going to single rooms, more therapy. I guess our board would just have to go back to the drawing board and figure out what we want to do with our facility that isn't meeting the needs right now. We have a board of directors that, as a nonprofit, would have to do that. But that's not much. Our board would have to decide, you know, what we're going to do. So.
Okay, Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess, again, you know, this is another one of those things, you know, all this complicated stuff, how this works. I guess it would be, I appreciated that just the explanation about the pot of money that's set aside for this, but it sounds like there's a lot of competition for that pot of money, and I wouldn't doubt that if we, you know, sent out a notice to every nursing facility in the state and said, how many of you really seriously need to upgrade your facilities and would like some extra money to do it, I bet you'd have quite a parade in here. And I don't know how we are supposed to decide, you know, who gets it and who doesn't, other than, you know, who's smart enough to contact their legislator and come in with a bill. So I guess I'd like to hear a little bit from the department about the backdrop of this, again, if we could, just to kind of get the lay of the land so that we're not just picking winners and losers here, because that's what I worry about. I don't doubt the need for a minute, but, you know, I just want to make sure that we're doing this fully aware of the impact on the whole state.
Okay. Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, members, I think Craig DeBell from Clifton Life and Allen is in the audience, formerly with the state, and I think he can provide a little bit more insight into the process and a little bit more of the detail that that Representative Liebling is looking for. That might be informative for the group.
Okay. If you want to come forward and please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Greg Spell. I'm with the accounting firm of Clifton Larson Allen. Before that, I spent 30 years at the Department of Human Services working with nursing home rates and audits. So I know a little bit about property. So could you please restate the question for me? I missed it.
Representative Liebling, would you like to?
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get a little background on what we're doing here and how it relates to the overall state policy. And since you're at the table, thank you for coming forward. I'd also like to know if you're working on this particular project so that we kind of understand who we're hearing from here. But I'd like to know, you know, how we as a committee are supposed to kind of decide who should get this additional money to help do a project, because I don't want us to be just picking winners and losers here based on who has the wherewithal to come to the legislature for an exception, because I think we all know that we've got these kind of needs all over the state. So I guess that's a little bit amorphous of a question, but could you just give us a little more background about, you know, how this fits into the larger scheme of needs across the state?
Okay.
Briefly, Mr. DeBell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling. The moratorium exception fund is money that was set aside by a prior legislative session. It's already counted as being spent as far as the state budget goes. What they're doing here with these bills is tapping into that fund to spend some of that money that would otherwise go unspent. There was approximately $1.2 million in the fund available before the last round for which these two facilities applied. All of the projects combined together would spend maybe $500,000. That's a figure from DHS that I saw that when they issued their estimates of the different projects. So there's quite a bit of money that is scheduled to be unspent even if all of the projects were approved. You know, this what these two facilities are experiencing, and yes, I did work with these are clients of our firm, and I helped them to understand the cash flow that they would get from the rate adjustment that was given to them through the process, and how it's not going to meet their debt service needs. And the reason for that is because what we got now is two systems that were kind of melded together. Back in the mid-80s, nursing facilities rates were based on a cost system, recognizing the value of the assets and the amount of debt taken out. Equity was recognized if the value of the assets were less than the debt, and then you got interest expense on the debt as well. Then in the mid-90s, the system called the Alternative Payment System started, which is nicknamed APS. And that system was where facilities got out of doing all the cost reporting and simply got an inflation factor applied to their rate. After a while, these facilities said, you know, we need to do some physical plant improvements. And we can't because our rate is just prior year plus inflation. So they were allowed to do projects under the moratorium exception process. So when I was at DHS, then we had a problem. Well, how are we going to set rates for these facilities when we don't have their historical data anymore? And what we did was we came up with a system that just looked at the project by itself. Here's the number of assets. Here's the number of amount of debt. So you don't have a total equity at the facility picture. You just have the equity in that project. But if you do 100% debt financing, you have no equity. So all you get is the interest expense. So the rate adjustment is based on the interest expense only, not recognizing the principal portion of the debt you have to pay. And that's why these rate adjustments for these two facilities, if their project's approved, is not going to work for them, and that's why they're here seeking this exception.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you very much. And I'd still like to hear from DHS, because I think we need to have a bit of the broader perspective of, because the other question is really about the fact that we are aware that lots of facilities across the state probably need to do upgrades. And I get that there's this this so-called unspent money. But again, you know, if we're going to have a process that's fair, it should be one where everybody gets the same opportunity to come in and get that pot of money, not just kind of who has somebody they can hire who is in the know. So I wonder what DHS, what help can you give us here as we try to make this fair and not just pick winners and losers for upgrades and try to, you know, make this fair across the state or distribute it according to need or... You know, maybe we should be looking at, you know, what are their worst facilities in the state and directing the money there. Can you help me out?
Ms. Brady.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling. Certainly my knowledge and experience can't compare to the 30-plus years of Mr. Tabell, but I would say that everything that he testified to is to my understanding as well. I would say that the reason there is unspent money within the moratorium appropriation is that there have been facilities that have run into similar situations where they've actually turned back the moratorium money that they've been issued because it's just not quite enough for them to complete the project. And we have extra funds also from this appropriation due to, I think, lack of applicants. Because as they look at how this would be funded for them, they can estimate ahead of time that it just won't quite be enough for them to move forward. So this round of moratoriums, for all of the applicants that came in, they could actually all be funded and still have some appropriations left over then to move forward to the next round.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it sounds like we need to raise the appropriation that's available to each, if I'm understanding how this works, and that we need to get the word out better. I mean, I don't know, how does somebody become an applicant to this fund? I mean, does everybody, do all the nursing facilities in the state know that this is available? Everybody's nodding. And so then the problem is just that it's so low that a lot of them can't make work with what we've got. And so the bill before us is asking to raise it for this one, in this one case, and but that would only help those who know to come in and ask to have it raised, presumably. So it sounds like what we really need is a change in overall policy to make this work for more than just this one facility. Does that sound like I'm on the right track?
Ms. Brady.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that is certainly something that could be explored. DHS is also exploring revamping the property rights system as a whole. As you know, details have not been hammered out yet, but it is something that we are looking at, and that could be a part of the solution as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Newton.
Mr. Chair, as I read the bill, it looks as if we are setting a policy here that would apply to all nursing homes. And am I reading that correctly? That any nursing home that applies and fits within the number of active beds would be entitled to this increase? Or is it specific only to these two particular places?
Thank you. Representative Zerwas.
If Ms. Brunelli wants to take it, I'll punt to you. Members, Representative Newton, my understanding is the language is specific to the Mount Olivet Garden Angels project, because that's who falls into those parameters for the moratorium exception and the bed.
Okay. Any other questions for members? Representative Zerwas, to your bill.
All right. Mr. Chair, members, in closing, I just want to thank the partnership from Mount Olivet and from Guardian Angels. I was honored to be asked to join on this bill and carry this bill forward in collaboration with Minority Leader Thiessen. Mount Olivet is in his district, and so I was honored to join on this bill and move it forward for Minority Leader Thiessen and for myself. And on a side note, you heard Dan Dixon of Guardian Angels mentioned the 50-year of operation at the Care Center in Elk River, and Guardian Angels as a nursing home is celebrating 50 years of operation in our community that started with a group of church members, a group of concerned business owners, and citizens within our community that banded together and said, we need to do a better job of taking care of elder community within our community and surrounding areas. And 50 years later, they're doing an immaculate job, and I want to thank the members of the community to help us renovate our oldest facility as we look forward to another 50 years. And with that, I'm done.
All right. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. I will renew my motion that House File 1221, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion is adopted. Thank you, Representative Zerwas.
Thank
Next,
you.
We have House File 162. Representative Nornes, if you'd please come forward. And I will move House File 162 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Representative Nornes, you have an author's amendment. I will move the A1 amendment. If you want to explain that quick.
I don't have a copy of it in front of me, but I believe it just adds a couple of, or maybe you could read it.
Right, it is just adding.
Yeah.
Oh, there, okay, to get the bill in the shape you want it. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It appears that most of the rest of the bills here are for rate increases for individual nursing homes. I called yesterday a woman I know is the nursing home administrator in Fairmont, and she seemed kind of astounded. She said that she was under the impression that the nursing homes had an agreement not to do this anymore, and that what really needed to happen was the entire thing needed to be reformed, and, you know, the payment structure changed, which I think we've heard on a number of occasions. So I'm a little confused that at least that some of the nursing homes don't think this is going on in the state, that individual nursing homes are getting pay increases. And we talked about a half hour, and like I said, she just thought it wasn't happening. And so now I came, and I said, no, I got a whole bunch of them that are coming up tomorrow. So I'm kind of wondering, new guy, I guess I don't know what's going on that, but it is there something where the nursing homes have said they are going to work together as a group and not do this, or?
I can't speak for them. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to help Representative Considine out with that question?
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm with Leading Age Minnesota and also here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question. I was in the back. So if you could repeat the question, Representative, I'd really appreciate it.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I talked with the administrator of a nursing home in Fairmont yesterday because I saw all these were coming up. And I said, there's a number of homes that are coming up individually, and she seemed to be somewhat astounded at that and said she thought there was an understanding that they were going to try to get the entire system reformed rather than individuals coming forward one at a time. And said, no, there's a lot of them coming forward. And like I said, she seemed pretty surprised by that and thought that wasn't something, that there was some sort of agreement in place not to try to raise individual rates but to reform the entire system.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Considine, I thank you for the question. I would say that as we've had a conversation on a couple of different hearings in this committee, you are aware that House File 316 does represent a reform and revamping of the entire payment system statewide, and I think we are continue to be very supportive of that. I think what you're seeing with individual situations also is as the budget process is dynamic, there are a lot of options as we still wait for budget targets and whatnot, and I think that that's what you're seeing today. I think the takeaway from all of these bills is that we do have a broken system, that there are a lot of issues, and really appreciate the attention that is being given to these issues this year. The individual bills are somewhat symptomatic of that. But Mr. Chair and Representative, there's no particular formal agreement. Individual nursing homes are always welcome to come forward and bring their issues to the legislature.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Considine.
Would you see this as hindering the overall reform?
Ms. Thurlow.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the budget process is dynamic. We are supportive. The imperative is supportive of the overall reform. I don't know that we've done a side-by-side comparison with each individual bill and how it hinders or helps the reform. And certainly that will probably be a conversation more when we have budget targets and when we get to budget committee. So we don't have a particular position on any of the individual bills.
Anything else, Representative Considine?
I guess I'm troubled by trying to do it piecemeal rather than trying to actually have some real reform and get things done across the state.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question actually is for Ms. Thurlow, who just left.
And put my running shoes on today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Thurlow. I, too, am kind of disturbed by the process. Obviously, the system is broken, as you say, and we need to fix it. So why aren't we fixing it for everybody instead of doing it piecemeal, like Representative Liebling and Representative Considine said?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we certainly have brought forward a statewide proposal that we think helps address many of the issues that are raised. Again, I think the conversation has to occur in the budget committee as to, you know, whether there is enough funding for the overall reform bill. If these individual bills also go forward, you know, I think there's a conversation for the budget committee as well. We certainly support a statewide solution, but know that there are particular issues raised by each of these individual bills as well.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. I'd just like to say that there's specific issues just like that in every one of our districts, and we should be looking at that as a whole, and I don't believe the piecemeal approach being taken here is the best policy we can follow.
Members, we do have a motion on the floor for the A1 amendment. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was personally rather shocked to see that we're doing all these individual bills. Does this mean that if we were to bring individual bills for each of our own counties that we would all get a hearing then? Mr. Chair?
Representative Yaruso, a hearing would be considered. We are against deadlines, though.
Well, what we're seeing here is a number of individual bills for individual counties, which was not what, frankly, I expected to happen, given that this committee spent quite a lot of energy discussing your bill to do an overall revamping of the system. And these individual bills are circumventing that process. These are all finance bills. It's not working on the overall policy to fix the problems in the state. If what we do is just take these one at a time and whoever gets theirs in and gets it approved gets their money. So if we bring bills for all of our own individual counties and our own individual facilities, are they going to get a hearing like these are?
If we can get it in before deadline, Representative Yaruso.
If we drop them this week, will we get hearings on bills for our individual facilities, for our individual counties? Because this seems to be a change in the direction of the committee. At the beginning, we were working on a comprehensive bill to reform the entire process for the entire state. But now we're seeing a hearing that's concentrated on bill after bill after bill for individual facilities and individual counties that members have brought. So will everyone get a chance to get a hearing on a bill if we drop those bills for our individual facilities and our individual counties?
Representative Yaruso, as I said before, if we can get it in before deadline, we will. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I must say that I'm just flabbergasted. We're not even discussing the A1 amendment. But what I will tell you, though, is that Jim Wolf, who was on the edge with that lovely tie, the silver and maroon tie, hi, Jim, his facility, Good Sam, in Battle Lake, is actually in Bud's district, but I have many constituents that work at the Good Sam, as well as constituents that reside at the Good Sam. I've been there numerous times. And I made a promise to Mr. Wolf this fall that I was going to roar like a lion for our elderly folks and for the individuals that work at that facility. And so to tell Mr. Wolf and the residents there, as well as the workers, that I would not allow myself to fight for him on this individual bill would have been a travesty for everyone involved. And I always encourage my constituents to bring forward any bill, because I'm not going to silence them in any way, shape, or form. And so welcome to the committee, Mr. Wolf, and thank you, Mr. Nornes, Representative Nornes, for authoring the bill, and look forward to hearing and discussing the A1 amendment and moving on.
Representative Keel. Pass. All right, Representative Nornes, to your amendment.
This amendment actually adds two additional facilities to the bill that we're dealing with this morning. That's what it does.
Okay, are there any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say to Representative Franson and to the committee, the problem is, Representative Franson, I appreciate your position. I really do. And, you know, we're all elected to represent our constituents. And the problem is we all want to roar like a lion for the constituents in our own districts and for the nursing homes. And when we had our wonderful hearing in Faribault, there was a nursing home administrator there from my district who came over to me and told me about the issues in her facility, which they have a terrible time keeping staff because they're competing with the Mayo Clinic, which can pay a whole lot more than the nursing facilities can. So this is a problem that in my own district isn't very acute. And so when I saw these bills, I thought, well, gee, you know, I should put one in too. And the problem is that Representative Urulis is referring to is that we all should. I mean, is there a member here who doesn't feel like the nursing homes in their district are underfunded? There isn't. And that's the problem. It shouldn't be about who has political clout and who is the first to rush in with a bill. It really should be about a policy that's fair across the state, because an elderly or disabled person in one district is not more deserving than one in another. And a person who works in one nursing home is not less deserving than a person who works in another. So I think that's the issue that we all have to wrestle with here, and why we're all so supportive of the chair's bill to revamp the system and make it fair. And that's why it's so really disturbing. And I get it. You know, none of us would say to our constituents, no, I'm not bringing your bill. And of course, we're going to try. And it's kind of up to the chair to set the policy for everybody and say, I'm going to be fair to everybody, and I'm going to be the backstop to this issue. And that's kind of the complaint here. It's certainly not about you or about Representative Nornes or any member who wants to do the very best for their constituents, because we all do. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with House File 316 completely putting nursing home funding on a cost basis, completely different direction, all of these increases they're asking for will really be nothing, because if that bill passes, they all start in the same place at the cost, not at what they want to have, not at an increase to make them break even, but at their cost basis. So this makes it that these things are nice as a backup. And I know one of the most senior members and somebody I respect very much, Phyllis Kahn, if she has a bill she wants to pass, she puts it everywhere she can find it. This is a good example of that as far as I'm concerned. And I hope that 316 passes. And if it does, all these bills we're hearing today and voting on today don't really make a lot of difference. But if it doesn't pass, they're taking care of what they think is their highest priority. And I think we all have to give them a hearing. And as far as having hearings for every county, I think if that's what you want to do, that's fine. If we have time, we got 9 bills today. We're going to have to be here every night of the session in order to hear all those. That's fine. But I don't see a lot of people gathering up. And as I mentioned before, this isn't very seldom done. But there's sure a lot of them today.
Representative Nornes, to your bill.
Chair Schumacher, I'd have to add that I'm also very supportive of your overall bill that helps all nursing homes. I think we all agree on that. We have a unique story here. We're not just looking for an increase because we just want an increase. We have a unique situation in these counties that I believe, once you've heard the testimony, you will agree that it is a little unique, and it's not just simply wanting additional money. And I think to begin to tell us about our situation, Nathan Johnson is the CEO of the Pioneer Care Center in Fergus Falls. And I think Nathan he's going to tell you the first part of the story.
All right. Thank you, Representative Nornes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as Representative Nornes stated, my name is Nathan Johnson. I'm the CEO of Pioneer Care in Fergus Falls. And joined by me today are my colleagues from Fergus Falls and Battle Lake and Barbara Garrity from Pelican Rapids. We are Pelican Valley in Pelican Rapids, Minnesota. We are the long-term care facilities in Otter Tail County that are impacted by the bill before you. I want to thank Representative Nornes for sponsoring this legislation and Representative Schumacher for being a co-sponsor. I know this committee has heard of the difficulties that all long-term care facilities in our state face, and we do face those same problems that every long-term care facility in our state faces. Plus, we have an added problem that has been inadvertently created by the state of Minnesota. Of all the long-term care facilities in this bill, we are close to the Minnesota Veterans Home. The Minnesota Veterans Homes are reimbursed at a substantially higher rate than our skilled nursing facilities are, our private skilled nursing facilities. This is in no way meant to be disparaging to the Minnesota Veterans Homes. However, this bill and the disparity that it creates in our marketplace puts the private long-term care facilities who are near the Minnesota Veterans Home at a significant disadvantage. We are unable to offer even closely competitive wages and benefits to attract and retain qualified staff. There are 5 Minnesota Veterans Homes in the state, including Fergus Falls and Laverne. The other 3 Veterans Homes, Hastings, Minneapolis, and Silver Bay, are in areas where the private skilled nursing facilities have been reimbursed at higher levels under our current reimbursement structure, thus reducing the disparity. So House File 162 is a matter of fairness. It will put our facilities on par with other long-term care facilities who are near the Minnesota Veterans Homes, and it will allow us to be more competitive with wages and benefits, coming closer to being able to offer caregivers similar pay for the same work in the same marketplace. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Zwiers, and I'm the COO for Brown Home in Fergus Falls. And I wanted to highlight the pay disparity issues that we face. This bill for us is more of a reclassification, so that within the system, we're not trying to step out of the system, but we feel we need to be reclassified within the system. If you look at the slide that's on the screen right now, it shows that a nursing assistant starts out their career at over $2 an hour less than they would in the Minnesota Veterans Home. And by year 16, at the end of the scales, it's over $8 an hour difference. This is for somebody doing the same work in the same type of facility in the same community, but there's that big of a difference. An LPN starts out about $2.50 to $4 an hour less, and by the end of the scales, they're $8 to $9 an hour less. And then if you look at the RNs, they start out at $6 an hour less, and it's up to $15 to $17 an hour less. Another way of showing this, if you look at the red on the screen, a nursing assistant, we have a gradual increase over time where the Veterans Home, the Minnesota Veterans Home, has a very steep increase on the wages they're able to pay. Then an LPN, the same thing. By the end of the scales, an LPN is making $18,000 more per year working in the same job for the same amount of time in the same community. And an RN, the disparity rises to $31,000 to $35,000 per year. Wages in the Minnesota Veterans Home are set by a statewide contract that's based on the Twin Cities wages. These wages we are able to offer are much lower because the state long-term care peer grouping classifies us as deep rural. Yet we are being forced to compete against urban wages for the very same jobs, and we can't. And this doesn't include the benefits that the state pays to the Minnesota Veterans Homes. We need your help in solving this problem. It is an issue of fairness, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to highlight the especially difficult situation our group of long-term care facilities face, inadvertently created by the state, and we urge you to support House File 162. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jim Wolf. I am that lion that Representative Franzen was referring to. I'm not a lion, L-Y-I-N-G, but an L-I-O-N. I belong to a Lions Club, and we had a little fun with that when a group of them were at our facility for a legislative forum. Representative Nornes was also at that. I want to thank you for hearing this debate on this bill. I think the information that you've seen is very dramatic from Mr. Zwiers. We all want to thank you for the effort this committee is making to highlight the needs of all long-term care facilities in our state. We strongly support the imperative bill that this committee has passed several weeks ago. All of us in the long-term care profession need this to help to care for the
the frail residents, the frailest that live amongst us in this state. You all support that. However, our group of facilities that are covered by this bill, House File 162, need this legislation that is before you today. We have the unusual situation with the Minnesota Veterans Home so close to us. We need your help in solving this by passing this legislation and including it in any long-term care bill that finally gets adopted by the legislature this session. All of the nursing homes in the state need your help, and we especially need it because of our unique circumstances. I want to thank you from our group for hearing this bill and ask for your support of House File 162.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, are there questions from members? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a comment. This is unique only in the fact that you're referring to the Veterans Hospital. But we were in Faribault, as you know, on Friday. They had a staff that was leaving to be a cashier at an Aldi's, because that was $3 more than they could afford to pay. And we've had other people testifying over the past number of weeks about they're near a hospital, they're near a manufacturing center or plant, etc. So this is, it's not unusual. I mean, we have a major, major problem, and I know it's you know, the people that are working in your facilities are doing an incredible job, but I know how difficult it is. But as some of the comments have already said, I mean, this is one problem. The only difference is you're in the Minnesota Veterans Home versus all these in Faribault. It's a statewide problem, but thank you for coming.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Franson, I appreciate your dedication to your constituents. I would point out, though, that the Fairmont Nursing Home that I talked to and was looking at is not in my county or my district. It's actually in Representative Gunther's district. And I guess my concern is statewide for all the seniors. And Representative Gunther, there were two key words that jumped out when you were speaking. I agree with everything you said, but one was, if it passes, and the other one was, I hope it does. Neither one of which are guarantees. And these, again, look like back doors to me that would not necessarily inspire confidence that they're going to pass.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Representative Considine is exactly right. You know, we're kind of hedging our bets here, and I sure hope that, you know, the GOP is going to put forward a budget, and I sure hope that Representative Schumacher's bill is going to be funded in it. But I mainly raised my hand just to say to Mr. Wolf and the other testifiers that thank you very much for coming forward. And, you know, we in no way mean to, you know, disparage your situation, or we fully get it, we understand, and you know, we appreciate the tough job that you do to serve the folks that you serve, and we sure hope that we can help you out and make the situation better for you, because, you know, we absolutely hear what you're saying, and the fact is that, as you know, it's widely shared across the state. For everybody has different situations, but the overall picture is not a happy one. So thank you so much for being here today.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't have some of the previous numbers we've seen presented to have kind of side by side. Does any of you have a feel for how do the rates paid at the veteran centers compare with what we've heard previously that some of the hospitals are paying, so we can kind of compare the situations, because we've got other nursing homes that are in the vicinity of hospitals, Mayo being one of them, but to get a feel for, you know, how extreme the issue is in different places.
I'm not curious, question. Mr.
Wolf.
I don't know.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Yaruso.
Yes, do you know how the veterans' homes' pay scales compare to some of the hospital pay scales we've been hearing about?
Mr. Wolf.
Well, they're very similar. I know that in our community, the RNs, the scale is actually a little higher than the hospital scale.
Okay, any further questions? All right, then I renew my motion that House File 162. Oh, excuse me, Representative Nornes, any final comments?
I've got this closing, this is going to be it. For those any doubters in the audience. Actually, I was just going to say this is actually exacerbated by the pool of potential employees out there right now. It's a very tight pool, and that makes it even more difficult for all of these facilities. We had a one facility in I believe Grant County that closed strictly because they could not find enough employees. So it's a critical need. This is just part of the solution. So, again, I thank you for your interest and support of 162.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew the motion now that House File 162, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. No. Bill is adopted. Thank you. Thank you. Next, we have Representative Backer with House File 553. And I will move that House File 553 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lean is also here to present the bill. And before we begin, Representative Newton.
Yes, before they start, Mr. Chair, I would like to suggest that we move all of these bills at once, unless one of the bills is significantly different from the other. Because I think, you know, in fairness to everyone here, we're going to be hearing the same thing over and over again. And I would like to know if we can move all of them at once, unless for some reason one or the other bills is significantly different.
Just a moment, Representative Newton. Okay, I think that's something we can do. So I'm going to move all of these now, and then we'll listen to testimony, and then we'll vote on each of them. Oh, thank you, Representative Newton. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if HF 190, if we want to move it in the same group. It's a little bit different. It's not a nursing home, but the rehab facility at Courage Center.
It's my understanding, Representative Yaruso, that it has the same kind of concept. And
thank you.
So I'll do that. So in addition to moving House File 553, I also move House File 478, House File 232, House File 190, House File 730, and the House File 173 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Representative Backer, Representative Lean, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time. HF 553 provides a rate for nonprofit nursing homes located in Breckenridge and Moorhead, equal to the medium rate for nursing homes located in adjacent North Dakota cities to these cities. This bill impacts two Minnesota nursing homes, the St. Francis Home in Breckenridge, Minnesota, and the Everett Lutheran Home in Moorhead. North Dakota in recent years has risen their Medicaid rates paid on their nursing homes. This has led to a wide range of disparity in rates paid on border communities and has resulted in severe staffing issues for nursing homes located in the Minnesota communities. An example of this disparity is in St. Francis. Its payments, depending on the case mix, are anywhere from $48 to as much as $72 a day per patient, lower than the Phyllis, the nursing home just miles on the other side of the border. This has actually led them to close bids. It's approximately 80 bids in one wing.
40 bids
in one wing. And so it's not that they don't need the bids in Breckenridge. It's just the need of the disparity. HH 553 is a solution to this problem being faced by St. Francis and Evertide by providing a rate for them that is equal to the medium rate for those in North Dakota. I have today David Nelson from St. Francis Home in Breckenridge, Minnesota, and John Reaver from Evertide Lutheran Home in Moorhead to share the specific challenges and to answer your questions. Also joining me today is one of my co-authors, Representative Leon. At this time, I would like to turn it over to him for a few comments on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present this bill. And I think Representative Backer really hit it on the head that this is a common issue that his facility or the facility in his district faces, as well as the facility in my district. And it pretty much comes down to higher reimbursement rates in North Dakota as compared to Minnesota. So, in addition to the already shortage of employees for senior care, nursing home care, this kind of compounds on that when the facilities in North Dakota are able to pay higher wages than the facilities in Minnesota just because of the reimbursement rates. And Mr. Nelson and Mr. Rewer can talk more specifically about what they're facing in their own institutions, but I would like to also add one thing that adds to this challenge, and that's the fact that Minnesota has a reciprocity agreement with North Dakota. So, in other words, when a Minnesota medical assistance resident is served by a North Dakota facility, Minnesota has to pay the higher North Dakota rate. And in turn, when a North Dakota resident is serviced by a Minnesota facility, they are charged the lower Minnesota rate. So, on top of some of the already challenges that we face just with the reimbursement rates, it really adds to it when residents are going between the two states. So, again, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your time and the committee's time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nelson. I'm the administrator of St. Francis Home in Breckenridge, and I want to thank Representative Backer and Lean for bringing this needed legislation forward. As Representative Backer mentioned, the rates we receive under the medical assistance are anywhere from $46 to $72 lower than the North Dakota facility, which is really right across the river. This excludes such costs as the property surcharge and external fixed rates that are differentiated between the two. The rate difference has caused us to close 40 beds last year. Very difficult decision to make. But those 40 beds had to be closed because we were losing approximately $1.5 million to keep those beds open. That difference in rate is an irony in that the story that, as Mr. Lean just mentioned, that our Minnesota residents, which would go over to North Dakota, would actually be paying more on the state side for those residents to be staff in the North Dakota nursing home. The medical assistance program, as he had mentioned, has been at a level in North Dakota that's been able to sustain the costs for the increased costs that they have in that state. One of the unique things in the state of North Dakota, obviously, is the oil, and that has created also an impact to us in getting our staff to be able to be hired and served in the competitiveness that you have in their wage and salaries. The continued cuts in the reimbursement may increase, as we go forward, the vulnerability of our frail and our elderly and the ability to access services close to home. We were a 120-bed nursing home, now we're an 80-bed nursing home. These seniors, at one point in time, supported our state services throughout their employment history, and it would be an irony that we can't serve them within the same state. Additionally, the low rates have resulted in our staff retention rate dropping steadily over the past 5 years from 83% retention back in 2009 to now we're sitting at 50% in 2014. And our turnover rate for staff went from 27% to 50% in 2014. In order to stop this outflow of staff, we need to be able to raise our salaries. But with an operating loss currently sitting at $425,000 that is expected to be $900,000 by the year end, that is not an option for us to be able to raise those wages without having the cash flow to do so. Even with the small increases in the rates over the last 5 years, we've had to raise our salaries, which has put us in the negative operating to allow us to be competitive in the labor market. In addition, our surrounding employment opportunities for the entry-level position is quite competitive, just as you heard earlier, in every community. And in addition, the nursing homes require an additional, as you're aware, certification, education for these staff members. For example, our nursing assistants, it's problematic to get these people to apply and to retain them as employees when there are other employment opportunities to choose that are not as strenuous and difficult as the work that the CRNAs, LPNs, and RNs do physically and mentally. That is why we're here today, is to preserve and have access for nursing homes on the Minnesota side, and that's why we're asking for the passage of House File 553, which will allow us to continue providing nursing home services to those receiving medical assistance, and I would request that support. And Representative Joe Schumacher, we do appreciate the long-term care imperative bill, because that is a step in the right direction.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Rewer. I'm the president and CEO for Eventide Senior Living Communities in Moorhead, Minnesota. I, too, want to thank Representatives Backer and Leon for bringing this needed legislation forward. Like St. Francis, Eventide is experiencing the challenge of rate differential between Eventide and seven North Dakota nursing homes within the Fargo-Moorhead metropolitan area. In a comparison of 2014 rates, six of the North Dakota facilities had their lowest case mix rate about 50% higher than our operating rate. We get reimbursed about $100 per person per day, and they range from $146 to $168 per person per day. In a competitive marketplace, you can see where this is just not sustainable for us going forward. As an outcome of that, we had been approved. I heard some discussion about the moratorium exception. We had been one of those facilities that was approved, but because of our fear of being able to not only recruit but even retain the staff we have, we had to forego that moratorium money and that expansion project this go around because of the inability to sustain what we have in place given the model. We've made the difficult decision lately of staying competitive. That's resulted in as with David's facility, some severe negative losses financially for us. And that, in addition to changing staffing ratios that are clearly different than facilities blocks away from us in Moorhead across the river. So when we hear the bills, with all due respect, I do believe ours is unique in the sense of the reciprocity. Either way, folks are going to find their way to that care, and it's likely going to be in Fargo versus Moorhead. And we think that would be a huge injustice to not deal with this up front. We've talked about the impact that House File 316 has. We do believe that is very much a big part of the solution going forward for all of what ails us in long-term care in Minnesota. But I think David and I both would agree that does not go far enough relative to our competitiveness within our North Dakota metro areas. Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for your testimony. And I'm really startled to hear about the reciprocity agreement. Wow, I never knew that. And could I just ask you, I mean, I hope this isn't too naive of a question, but when this agreement is so disadvantageous to Minnesota, why the heck are we doing that?
I can speak. That agreement was probably put in place. The Department of Human Services can probably tell you when that was struck. But I think it was struck between border communities that maybe had resources that could maybe be served by one state or the other. And so that reciprocity agreement came forward. Now, over the years, we were all pretty much at a cost-based neutral reimbursement. So it did not matter so much going from one state to the other. But since Minnesota has not been able to keep up on the cost base, that disparity has gotten great. And so that's where we are today. But at one point, 10, 15 years ago, we were right together at the same level. But things have changed based on that cost.
Mr. Chair, committee, if I could add to that. Just as a reminder, too, Minnesota and North Dakota, in particular, the only two states with equalized rates. And so if there were ever two states that were closely aligned in terms of reimbursing actual costs, it ought to be Minnesota, North Dakota. But it's clearly evidence of how far we've fallen behind versus North Dakota, which is not lucrative by any stretch, but funding actual costs of care. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I want to jump on the naive question like Representative Liebing had to do, too. I'm a small business person, and you lose a lot of money every year, and I get that. How do you pay the bills? I mean, after you lose $500,000 and $1 million, and I mean, where's the other stuff? Where's the money coming from if you actually are losing so much each year?
Yeah, we're probably unique, and I'll let John speak about Eventide. We're also attached to a hospital, so we have a hospital that's been helping us on the cash flow. That sustainability is not going to be there in the future. So big, big decisions have to be made in the state of Minnesota. Are we going to fund our seniors who have done their work in providing services and taxes for the future? We really do need to address it. Because if we can't, those will be the tough decisions, as an earlier person testified, that board members, we're a nonprofit, will have to make some tough, tough decisions. We made that 40-bed cut. We still have over 50, 60 that want to get into our nursing home. We can't serve them. I don't have the resources of the staff to do that with the amount of reimbursement that we currently have in place. So, yes, it's a very tough question. That timeline is running very short.
Mr. Robert?
Chairman Schumacher, Representative Baker, it's a terrific question, and I use it a lot as an analogy. We're in such a unique position. Downtown, you can raise the cost of your tomatoes or whatever you're selling to increase the cost of labor, the cost of other things that go up. We have no ability to do that, and that's really what puts us in a difficult position. And I will tell you, it's come at the expense of a few things. Our staffing ratios look far different than our facilities, even across the river. So that's the other answer to the question. When you can't beat them, you have to start joining them. So we have had some expansion into North Dakota, much like David's Hospital. We've tried to become more efficient through some growth, but I can tell you that it's a combination of really good people, our caregivers, continuing to do this for the right reasons. But we can't continue to put this on their backs going forward.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions for this bill? Representative Lee and Representative Backer, any final comments?
Oh, yes, question.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make a couple comments. First of all, this border conversation is also very prevalent in my district. My East Grand Forks, we talked about Good Samaritan just a few minutes ago, also has the same challenges. And many patients, many residents are moving to North Dakota. And of course, the reciprocity agreement is there. And I was aware of it. They've really, really had some challenges talking about it. And just the pay. To the other point of the hospital being part of the carrying, in my community of Crookston, they got rid of the nursing home because they just couldn't carry it anymore. They do still have the Alzheimer's, the dementia unit. They kept that. And I could watch it going down, and, you know, they just couldn't staff everybody. And, of course, what ends up happening is, even with the Alzheimer's unit, what they're doing is sharing time. I happen to have a niece that works as an RN. She works part-time in the hospital, and then when they're short at the nursing home, that's where she ends up getting called in quite often. But there's some real challenges, and it won't be long, and they'll not be able to fund that either. So just to put a little emphasis behind what is going on here, that is very, very problematic for our communities and especially in the border cities where all those competitions are going on. And the nursing programs in my district are also seeing a lot of nurses that just go to North Dakota because they obviously can be paid more. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Just a real quick response. Thank you, Reverend Keel, Representative Schumacher. The one piece that I, because we did look at this in great detail, because we didn't want to single ourselves out per se, other than the fact that as it relates to skilled care centers, nonprofit skilled care centers, Breckenridge and Moorhead, are, East Grand no longer has a skilled care center, it would be more of the housing side. So our equalization of rates that I spoke of is actually even more of an issue in that, but I appreciate the sympathy, because we're seeing it on all ends of the long-term care scale, no question about it. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, real quick, I don't think that Good Samaritan expanded because of that problem.
That's probably
after the flood, yes.
Mm-hmm. Final comments, Representative Backer, Representative Lean.
Have none, just would appreciate your support, Chair, and the members. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And members, again, we'll vote on all of these bills at 10 o'clock, which reminds me that we have 25 minutes for the final five bills that we have here. So if you could please keep your comments shorter. Members, or testifiers have traveled a long way to be here today. Next, we have House File 232, Representative Erdahl. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You notice I have no testifiers, and I can do this in 5 minutes. Nursing homes are obviously important to us. That's why we're meeting here today. There are a couple of very important reasons, health care and jobs among them. You are aware that there are a couple of major problems, lack of funding and disparity in the rates paid. And if we continue to only increase the funding, the disparity continues, just as at a different level. I do commend Representative Schumacher for the bill that he is proposing that I believe puts significant funding into this, but also addresses the rate disparity. If that bill happens to be too rich for some people's blood around here, I have an alternative, which is this. What I'm going to propose today addresses the needs of at least 147 of the lowest paid rate nursing homes in the state of Minnesota. The lowest of the low, the bottom. And this is what it would do. You have, I think, a small chart that's been passed out. This is prepared by Bob Held, and I'm just going to I'm going to plug in some numbers, but the numbers are interchangeable. If this were to go forward, different numbers could be used. I'm going to use the 40th percentile and 8%. Now, what we can do with the operating payment rates for nursing homes, we'll take those with the lowest rates, those below the 40th percentile, which would include about 147 facilities up to the 40th percentile. We'll call that the floor. And I'm trying to bring the lowest rate facilities up to the floor, but limiting increases to a maximum of 8%. For the biennium, this would cost about $6.2 million. And so that's basically what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to narrow the disparity rate with our nursing homes. I'm doing it by addressing the 147 lowest homes, bringing them up, and also hoping that there will be some amount spread out to all the nursing homes. But again, if we do them all equally without addressing the disparity, we just continue the disparity. And that, in less than 5 minutes, is my bill.
All right. Is there anyone who in the audience would like to testify to this bill? Seeing none, other questions from members? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to say Representative Erdahl is a master. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments?
I agree totally with
that. Big surprise there, Representative Erdahl. All right, Representative Considine.
Again, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but again, it's one piece at a time rather than going with your bill that seems comprehensive, and that just bothers me a lot, to be quite honest. So I appreciate what you're doing. I know your heart's in the right place about it, but we need to have a comprehensive plan.
And Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher, Representative Considine, and I agree. And you know what I said, if you can't do that, then you need to do something like this. And that's the point.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we need to make a commitment to the Chair's bill.
All right. Seeing no further questions, the committee thanks you, Representative Erdahl, for bringing this forward. Next, we have House File 173, Representative Rarick's bill, and House File 730, Representative Barrett's bill. And they're going to present together because the bills are incredibly similar. And when you're ready, please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, House File 173 is a bill that modifies nursing home facility payment rates in Mille Lacs, Isani, Pine, Chisago, and Kennebec counties. And I want to change where I was going to go a little bit. I appreciate all the comments that we've been getting. Ultimately, we do support Chair Schumacher's bill number 316. Part of the reason this bill was brought forward was a concern that the price tag on that bill was maybe going to not go through. And our bill was brought forward originally by my predecessor, Representative Faust. We have a unique situation in our area, like so many others have mentioned. But if you look at the map that is currently being handed out, our five counties are surrounded by counties that have a higher reimbursement rate. And it happened just like we were talking about, a piecemeal plan that certain areas came in, asked for their areas to get a higher rate, and it left us in this little donut hole where we're so close to the areas to the north and to the south. We have become a training ground. Our staff come in fresh out of school, get trained, and then head to areas where they can receive a higher rate. And so with that, I will turn it over. I have Todd Lundeen, campus administrator of Elam Care and Rehab Center in Princeton, and Jack LaRue, CEO and administrator of St. Clair Living Community in Mora, that will give you some more of the specifics of what they're facing because of this.
Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Todd Lundeen. I'm the campus administrator at Elam Care and Rehab Center in Princeton, and I've been there for 27 years. And I just truly thank you for the time just to be able to talk today. In the interest of time, I'm going to set aside my script remarks and just be able to touch on a few things because I truly appreciate the emphasis that's been placed on this matter. And I'm so happy that you all are working on a solution to the problem that's been many years in going here in Minnesota related to reimbursement. To add to the comments that have been made already, I just wanted to highlight that I took some time a while ago. Our facility in Princeton is six blocks north of the county line, which is the difference between the metro and the non-metro counties, as already so well pointed out. The average take-home pay of our nursing assistants is $775 for every 2 weeks. And as you can imagine, how hard that must be for many of the nursing assistants that work in our facilities, because many of them are single moms or single parents, and have such a difficulty trying to be able to make all the ends meet on that little bit of money. Today in my facility, we have 18 full-time positions open. We, like the other facilities that have testified earlier today, have dropped beds and so on, and that's been a huge challenge for us. One thing we did several years ago is we took the case mix scores, which is the care levels of all of our residents, and we took and calculated how much were we getting paid to care for them. What would it be like in a nearby metro rate nursing home? The difference was $700,000 a year. $700,000 a year different. And so obviously we have a huge disparity, as shown in slides 4, 5, 6, and 7, that outline what the differences are between what we are able to pay versus what nearby metro nursing homes are able to pay. And you can do the math yourself because those are annual amounts. And then I also took the time to map out where do our staff live. You can see there's a huge area to our south where we're almost not able to attract or retain any RNs or LPNs. On the slide that shows our nursing assistants, where actually every single one of them live, you can see we're able to attract some to the south, but it takes nothing when an opening happens in a metro nursing home for those people to jump ship and leave us. And I don't blame them. If you're going to make $5,000 or $10,000 a year more, you're trying to take care of three kids, and you're a single parent, you ought to be doing that. That makes total sense, and so I don't blame them one bit. Thanks for listening to my comments.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for this opportunity. My name is Jack LaRue. I'm the administrator CEO of what I'd like to call the finest nursing home in Kanawha County. The problem is it's the only skilled nursing facility in Kanawha County, and it's at risk at this point in time. Before I start, though, I would really like to thank Representative Rarick for his courage and conviction to author this bill and his understanding of the urgency of the bill. I, too, support House File 316, and I appreciate Representative Schumacher for his courage in offering that bill. But I can't wait anymore. A number of years back, there was what they called the rebasing. First year, I got 16 cents. Second year, I got nothing. The third year, I got nothing. And then they repealed rebasing. Rebasing was to try to fix the problem that 316 is looking at. We didn't get it because, of course, the economy took a nosedive. But just to let you know how serious the problem is, our fiscal year starts July 1st of each year. Since July 1st, I lost six registered nurses and eight LPNs to what I call the greener pasture phenomena. I can't compete against not only hospitals, I can't compete against nursing homes that are to the north of me and to the south of me because I am one of the lowest reimbursed facilities in the state. This bill would help us tremendously. I support 316, but if price tag is too much, this would be a nice phase-in for 316. It would help our facilities tremendously. Not only am I the administrator, CEO of St. Clair's, I'm also the mayor of Mora. And this becomes an economic issue for us. We're the sixth largest employer in the community, and we have 150 employees. Kanawha County is a poor county. Kanawha County has a high unemployment rate. Right now it's 8.7% unemployment rate, when the state average is a lot less than that. It would be an economic devastation to our community if we had to close our doors. The gentleman asked the question, how do you stay open when you have losses? You have to make tough decisions. I started out 25 years ago when I was there as an 80-bed facility. I downsized to 65 beds, and because of the nurse shortage I'm in right now, I'm holding my capacity to 51. I closed down my short-stay rehab wing to make staff efficiencies so that I can make sure that I have enough staff to care for the residents. I don't know if you understand the reimbursement system, but closing down a short-stay rehab wing is like shooting yourself in the foot. It is where you get your Medicare and your contract insurance reimbursement, which supplements medical assistance and private pay rates. Currently, the average rate in Minnesota for MA and private pay is about $30 a day short of our cost. And then to try to compete for wages, it's nearly impossible. So I ask that you support House File 173 if you can't pass 316.
All right, thank you. Representative Barrett.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My House File 730 is identical to Representative Rarick's. I think he said it very well. The testifiers were very clear in their remarks. I serve two facilities in Chisago County, both employ hundreds of people, both serve hundreds of people, and we're in the same situation. We're bordering the metro area, Washington County, that can pay higher rates. So I appreciate you guys coming today.
Thank you for that. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, questions from members? Representative Newton.
I just wanted to ask a brief question, Mr. Chair. I hear from nursing home after nursing home of the shortage of qualified personnel to work in the homes. Is that because there's a shortage of qualified personnel, or is it a shortage because you're not able to pay the rates that you would want to pay?
It's a good question, and it's very much because of the rates that are able to be paid. I read a statistic not too long ago that DHS was doing 11,000 criminal background checks per day in Minnesota for all kinds of care providers. That means that our staff on the average are jumping between 3 and 4 nursing homes per year because they're looking for a better place to work because they can't afford to stay at the lowest paying facility.
Representative Liebling.
Can I also respond to that, too? In our situation, it's because the baby boomer nurses are retiring, and that's what happened with my RNs. The local hospital's nurses retired, and so they're on a hiring spree, and as soon as there's an opening at the hospital, I lose them.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And that phenomenon is exactly what's happening in my county, Olmsted County, where Mayo Clinic, it's the same phenomenon, exactly. But my question was, the thing that I heard you say that kind of really piqued my interest was about having a high unemployment rate in your county. And how does that square with this? Because one would think, mostly we're hearing about this because we've got low unemployment in many places, and that means people have lots of options for jobs. So how is that working where you've got some of the highest unemployment in the state?
That's an excellent question. An excellent question. I always said that nursing homes kind of pray for a bad economy because then we have employees, but then we don't get reimbursement because the state has to cut us. In Kanawha County, most of the unemployment has to do with skilled labor. They're construction workers, what have you. They're not the caregiver type of employee. Their wives might be, but I already employ them.
You know. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sharon. Yeah, well, that's kind of interesting. I mean, it does, you know, not to in any way minimize your situation with reimbursement. I mean, we all really do get that. But it just makes me wonder whether you've got some potential there to try to, you know, even I've seen in my area, you know, where healthcare is a big, big growing field, lots of people that you would not expect are interested in changing careers if they have the opportunity to do so. And I just wonder if some of those people who are unemployed, you know, obviously it isn't for everybody. It takes a special person to work, do this kind of caregiving. But they might not always look the way you'd think. They might not always have the background you'd think. And there might be some people who might appreciate that outreach and find a new career.
I appreciate your comments. In fact, we are working really closely with Pine Tech and Anoka Ramsey to try to steer people into the new careers. We're working with the high schools, with the healthcare career, it's called Healthcare Career Options, to try to generate our own. And I really did tap into the scholarship program that's included in our rates to try to grow my own nurses. That takes time, and then once I grow them, they leave. Perfect examples, the last two resignations that I had, these were brand new nurses that had no experience, and they were with me long enough to get experience to get hired away.
So. All right, thank you. Seeing no further questions from the committee, we thank you for presenting. And next we have Representative Vogel.
Thank you.
On House File 487. And we do have two bills up for the final 5 minutes here, so if we can keep our comments brief, that would be appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. Actually, we brought some treats from Le Sueur. Davisco is a food processing company down there, so you're going to be treated to cheese curds from Le Sueur. And the mayor was kind enough to send you provisions for this evening. You each get a can, I believe, of Green Giant peas. So thank you for having me to the committee. I know this is the first time in front of the committee, so I wanted to make sure I brought my treats. Here on House File 487, and you've obviously heard most of the information before, so I'm not going to repeat it. The real issue is here is that it is a community-based hospital, community-supported, and because of the operating deficits that's been experienced over the last few years, there's going to have to be a decision made whether or not to close the nursing home if indeed the reimbursement rate can't be raised. So it's pretty simple relative to what you've heard before. I'm not going to go into a lot of prepared remarks because the time is short, and so I'll just turn it over to the presenters here. And first to go is Pam Williams, who is the interim CEO.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I appreciate you listening to us today, even though it probably sounds like the same song and dance over and over again. But it's my song and dance. It's important to me, and it's important to me to go back to my staff and say they heard what I said. We weren't the only ones. There's a lot of facilities that are out there. And it is a very dire state that we're in right now. So we really appreciate your attention to this. Our facility is a critical access facility, and we've been compensating for the nursing home for many years, but we've come to a state now where we can no longer continue that pattern. We have to make some decisions if something's not coming out of the legislature this year. So that's why we're here. I've been trying to get up here to have a hearing for at least 2 years, because I do believe in the process, and I do believe that you're here for the people and that you want to hear from us. So we're working the process, and that's why I'm here, even though there's eight more of us. But we still feel that we're as important as everybody else. So I thank you for listening. Same thing. We have a disparity in our rates. We've done what we can do. I will let Luann Lynn, she's our nursing home administrator, speak to that as to what our nursing home has done in order to try to cut some of those problems that we've had with expenses.
Thank you. My name is Luann Lynn. I'm the licensed nursing home administrator for Minnesota Valley Health Center Nursing Home. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for seeing us today. Currently, we're reimbursed an average daily rate for our facility at $185.24. Last year, if we wouldn't have been accepted for a PIP grant, we would have received 6 cents as an increase in our daily rate. Looking at a few facilities around our area within a 20-mile radius, we're paid anywhere from $12 to $22 less per day per resident than the other facilities. We're just not able to be financially viable at this rate. And currently we depend on our critical access hospital that we're attached to subsidize our operations. We lost almost $900,000 last year, and over the last 7 years we've lost $4.5 million. We've exhausted all of our resources and our options, including delicensing beds and using the single bed incentive by converting some of our double beds into single beds. Our nursing home was originally 85 beds, and now we're down to 55 beds. 15 of those beds we have delicensed within the past couple of years and had to reduce staffing by 16%. We're not able to pay our staff the market rate. We have 96 people that work at the nursing home, and we have 67% of those people that are within the LeSueur-Henderson school district. We have the same trouble trying to recruit staff and keep them as the other people across the state. We also struggle with trying to keep the RNs. We're just not able to compete financially, and without the hospital, we just would not be able to go on. I'm going to give it back to Pam Williams for a few more comments.
I'm sorry, we are running very short of time at this point, and we have another bill, so if you could please.
Sure. Just wanted to say that we've been in our town for 50 years, the hospital has, and the hospital is very important to the community and the businesses that are there, such as Cambria and Davisco and LSI, which is a foundry. So it's important that the hospital stay here. So in order to survive, we may have to do some very hard discussions, and I had to come here to speak to all of you before we can, you know, cross all our bridges that we possibly can. So I appreciate your attention to the bill and anything that you can do to help us. And we also brought one of our city council members here. He's also on our board. Dave, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, very quickly. Thank you for the opportunity. I've just got on the city council. I'm a retired educator, and this whole discussion has reminded me of something in education we refer to as a starfish story, where starfish wash up on the beach, and somebody's walking on the beach and throwing them back in, and someone says, "What the heck are you doing?" He says, I'm throwing starfish back in the sea so they won't die. And he says, "Well, you're never gonna save the lives of all these starfish." And he said, "I can't make a difference to the others, but I can make a difference to this one here." And I think instead of kicking the can down the road and saying we got to fix the whole system, whenever that's going to happen, we're telling you that we're starfish on the beach, we're drying out, we're not going to last very long, and we want you to address our need right now, or we won't be alive.
All right, thank you. Is there anyone who wishes to testify from the audience? Any questions from members? All right, Representative Vogel, briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You pretty much heard it all, so just appreciate your support on the bill.
All right, thank you very much. Representative Freiberg is next with his House File 190. And members, this is a very similar to the amendment that we put on to House File 316. So I think we all remember how we voted on that one, too. But briefly to your bill.
Thank you very much for fighting the time to squeeze us in. You've already heard this twice before, so I will turn it right over to my testifiers.
And I'll be brief because this is my third time here. I'm Matt Kinney. I didn't bring cheese curds or peas today, but what I can tell you is we serve some of the most medically complex people from all Minnesota counties. You've heard certainly compelling testimony today from many other skilled nursing facilities. We feel like we're uniquely different in that we have people that have very complex needs that cannot be met in our statewide nursing facilities, with the exception of the TRP. Thank you.
And I'm Dr. Heidi Street. I'm the medical director at the TRP. And thank you to the chairman and committee members again for the opportunity to come. Just to reiterate, we serve a uniquely different population, people with spinal cord and traumatic brain injuries, which really can't be served anywhere else. We have a really unique subspecialty team that's able to get people, 80% of our clients, back into the community, which is not only the right thing to do for those individuals, but also is a huge savings long-term for the state. We are there is no other place that does what we do, and I'm very proud to say that we are a state resource. Just this week, I've met a young man from Le Sueur, an older gentleman from Hibbing, someone from Duluth. We've discharged someone to Dawson and Bemidji. So it really, we're located in Golden Valley, but we are a state very vital and unique resource. And thank you for your consideration of our bill.
Thank you. Anyone from the audience? Any questions from members? All right. Thank you for that presentation. Members, if there is no objection, I would like to just make one motion to move all of these bills to Health and Human Service Finance. I'm not seeing any objections to that. So with that, I will renew my motion then to move House File 173, 730, 232, House Files 487, House File 553, and House File 190, and re-refer all of them to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, members. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I've kind of waited to the end here, just kind of going off of everything we've heard today, we just continue to hear about the staffing problems, and we did on our great tour that we heard in Faribault, and thank you for that opportunity to get down to Faribault and to visit and see the folks there. But Ms. Williams, when she said, you know, I want to be heard, from the Minnesota Valley right there at the end, I think that speaks to all of us, you know, pretty strongly. And I really challenge you as your 316 goes forward, we really have got to make sure with the targets, and I hope you're fighting for the money because we have this surplus, and I hope you're honing in on that, and I expect you to have sharp elbows and fight for this because the staffing just continues to be a big problem. I was really concerned with what Representative Rarick kind of said there. He said he was kind of worried, and the reason they were bringing it forward is because they were concerned it wasn't going to go through. So I just that was a big red flag from Representative Rarick, and I just challenge you with your sharp elbows and to fight for your space in the budget. So we clearly need it, and like Miss Williams said, and we all did, we all heard, you know, that we need to fight for this money and to really fix the problem. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Lilly. The hearing is adjourned.